This is a Dauntless Media Collective podcast. Visit dauntless.fm for more content.
And I said, Grant, I'm going right now to move out of my office. I don't want to do it when people are around. And so I took all night and I did it in the dark and I moved out of my office, which is so weird. And I just left. And as soon as the sun came up, I was driving down Wade Hampton, stopped and got an Egg McMuffin and was done.
Hi, I'm Nate.
I'm Gail.
And this is Full Mutuality. Today on the show, we have actually a guest that I'm very excited to talk to.
Me too.
And I know I say we say that a lot. We say we're excited about our guests, but we always are. Today,
well,
our guest
when you pick your own guests, you're deliberate about it, right?
Like, it's so true.
You know, people write us all the time and are like, "Hey, can you take this book author on your show?" And we get a lot of those. Sometimes they're AI, sometimes they're real people, but we're still, you know, we're it's fun when you run it because you think through who are the people you want to have a discussion with? Like, who are the actual people you would enjoy sitting down and having a conversation with? And I know that when I've heard you discuss topics we'll probably get into today, I've been like, oh, when Nate says I messaged her, I'm like, you don't have to run that by me. You know, I'm thrilled.
So all of you who are waiting to hear who we're talking to today, our guest today is Dr. Camille Lewis, who teaches at Furman University, though you're currently on sabbatical right now. I do have to say real quick, I have been waiting for an opportunity to talk to you. And I wouldn't say opportunity presented itself, because I could have reached out to you at any time over the last 15 years and said, hey, let's talk, even though I haven't had a podcast for the last 15 years. But I know I've been in touch with you a little bit, and your husband, who was an old teacher of mine. And your story is incredible. So let's kind of set the stage, and I'll give a little preview about how we know each other, and then feel free to kind of talk about what you do, and then give us like your background. But,
okay.
The reason we know each other is this, monolith of a thing, that's been in the news recently, seems to always find its way into the news, a place called Bob Jones University. It is my alma mater. I graduated there in 2007, which was also the year that you and your husband left the university faculty. So let's rewind. Let's backtrack and tell us your origin story. How did you end up in the orbit of a place like Bob Jones University? I think our conversation is going to also expand out into the broader world of the independent fundamentalist Baptist movement. So we'll talk a bit about that. So I know that you are connected or have a background in that world, not currently connected.
So
tell us,
Can we start with childhood? Can we start with
I was born in South Bend, Indiana. And when I was 9 months old, my parents converted to fundamentalism. They had both had, I mean, to use the phrase, I have a PhD minor in religious studies, so I can don that vocabulary like an academic, but they had their conversion experience, but way before that, many years before that. But when they moved to South Bend, Indiana from Detroit, they had good friends who kind of, they joined in, the church. It was Community Baptist. That's a big old BJU church. It was a GARB church.
What is GARB church?
General Association of Regular Baptists. So it's kind of a northern Midwest conservative. Okay. I think Cedarville is still their flagship school.
The church I grew up in was GARBC until about the year that my family started attending there.
Oh, okay.
They split off from the GARBC because the GARBC got too liberal.
Liberal, whatever that means.
Boy.
Right. Right.
Oh,
but my parents were always... because they were not raised in fundamentalism, they were always love was paramount. That was, the rules were way secondary. It was more like this is the group we're in, so we're gonna go along, but this isn't reality in a cosmic sense. This isn't that big a deal. So there was always this, foundation of love and family. And I think that made me, as when things got tough, that made me realize this is not good. And so they gave me a foundation that I really appreciate. But, you know, when the church opened a Christian school, they decided that that's where my brother and I should go. And so from first grade through 12th grade, and even though we moved around, I was always in some kind of a Christian day school.
I feel like up to this point, your story, what you have just shared, and Nate's just totally track. Like the grounding with parents that really love him, that converted into fundamentalism, even though they had a conversion story before. And like that, it's fundamentalism and him growing up kind of coincided. And then the growing up in private Christian schools,
straight
through 12. Yeah, you guys. All right.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
Yeah, so I relate to that. Yeah.
Okay. So, and I don't know about for you, but for me, if you were bookish in my world, the place you went was Bob Jones. If you had any, if you were nerd, you know, that's where you ended up. My brother is 8 years older and I, you know, in my world, he hung the moon and that's where he was. So I was like, well, that's where I'm going to go. So, you know, it just kind of made sense. I mean, he, bless him, he's got a PhD in rhetoric too. So, so it makes, there's a reason I did that, you know, and it was partially talent and gifting, but it was also, Steve did it, so I should do it too. It's sweet. It makes for fun family dinners.
You guys must have some great debates going down.
It is fun. It's very fun. But so and if I had left Bob Jones after 4 years, I probably would not have had the major trauma that I had. Everything started to get pretty terrible once we were in grad school, once we were married. So
I'm going to back this up a little bit, just because before we started rolling, I mentioned that I know you only got 11 demerit points when you were at Bob Jones, which was kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
So people who don't know, Bob Jones gives demerits for being bad and for not being, for doing anything,
for not being bad.
Basically.
Yeah, for not
existing.
Existing
much.
For even trying. For existing. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. For even trying to be good.
Yeah.
Right. If you get caught.
And you float under their radar as a student, and it was fine. You were not, you know, opposing anything or really out there, and they didn't notice anything.
I kind of disappeared. Really, the two reasons I got demerits were I didn't answer a call slip from the costume room, and what that was is a call slip was a little note, little green note that you'd get from an office on campus that said come see us, and I forgot. And so that was 10. And then I forgot to check in, or I was late to check in after going to the mall or buy low. Yeah,
one point on that.
Yeah.
But then
someone has you beat, though, real quick. There is we know of somebody who has you beat.
Oh, really?
Yes. So Lance Weldy, throughout his 4 years, I don't believe he ever got a single demerit, or maybe he got
Lance,
one.
I need to go talk to him. Yeah. Well, see, if you got under 10, it was expunged.
That's right.
So that's right. I had, you know, I would have here and there some, but they all got expunged. So the only thing that's on my record's 11. Because of that one failure to check in.
I'll have to go back through the archives of our podcast when we had him.
I need to listen to his.
Lance was on, for those who are listening into this one who haven't gone back in our archives, Lance was on talking about the book he wrote called BJU and Me.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a fantastic archive of just being queer at Bob Jones.
It's
a fantastic book.
That book.
Yeah.
That was one. We read it. I read it out loud to my husband on a drive, probably from Missouri home. And yeah, that made the drive.
That's how Nate and I were getting through it on my drives back and forth to see him. He was reading the book to me and it was so powerful. Like we would, I would just stop and I'd be like, Nate, did you experience that? Tell me about, like, trying to give me insight into like the Bob Jones experience and what he grew up with and lived with. But going back to your story, want to transition back to that. So as a student, you make it through, they don't notice you. But then, you're a woman who starts getting degrees.
Yeah.
Who has opinions and thoughts.
Yeah.
Now you're educated. Now you're a teacher, a woman.
Yeah, so I taught there
Jones.
As a grad student, which is part-time. But part-time at BJU is full-time in every other planet, in every other university. So I taught three-hour classes for 4 semesters, and that paid for my grad degree and gave me $40 a month.
Whoa.
And room and board. And, my husband. My husband was doing the same thing. Sorry.
Is there a lot of female teachers at BJU? Is that like a common thing?
Yeah, there are. And a lot of them are wives. That's that's another story. We could talk about that in a minute. But so I got my master's degree in 1992. My research topic was feminism, by the way.
Ooh. I'm sure they didn't like that.
At Bob Jones.
At Bob Jones. Yeah. Bennett Jones did not approve. She made that very clear. I have that letter that she wrote. And then we taught. My husband was in the voice department. I was in the speech department, and we taught there full time from 92 to 96. Then we went for our doctoral degrees at Indiana University. We came back in 2000, and then we were forced to resign in 2007. So that's the timeline.
So when did the trouble start? Was it after you came back? Was it before you went away?
It was. Okay, so when I was in grad school, I had a miscarriage, and my second pregnancy came while I was writing my dissertation, and my daughter died 3 days after her due date. She was born still.
My condolences.
I'm sorry. You probably need a trigger warning for this, but that just rocked my world. I mean, that just down to the foundation. And so that when our son came in 2003, Isaac, he'll be 20 in a few weeks here. I was like, I don't want to mess this up. I mean, I finally have this little screamer. I don't want to mess this up. He's so awesome. And fundamentalist parenting says that you were supposed to feed your baby every 3 hours for 30 minutes. Well, Isaac hadn't read the books. And it was very important for me to nurse him, because with Elise, my daughter, I had never felt more useless when my milk came in and she wasn't there. I felt, utterly useless. So in order for my own healing, I needed him. I needed to nurse him. But he wasn't listening to what the fundamentalist said he should do. So I honestly, he was 6 weeks old. I threw out those books and I thought, I'm just going to do whatever he does, whatever he wants me to do. And so that meant that he ate every 2 hours for an hour. And if you met Isaac now, this would make total sense, because there's two things he loves. He loves being cozy and he loves carbohydrates. So that makes perfect sense. And so I was sitting a lot, and a friend of mine, an older mom, said, why don't you read every verse in the Bible that mentions breastfeeding since you're sitting there? And I saw a whole new picture of God. I saw that God does not keep us at arm's length. The verse was, can a nursing mother forget her child? So I can't forget you. So God is a mother, is a nursing mother. And I was like, I couldn't forget Isaac. I couldn't. I chemically could not forget him. And I thought, God loves me like I love Isaac. And then I looked at my students and realized, God loves my students like I love Isaac. And that's when the trouble started.
It's funny, because as you're mentioning just that relationship with your son and loving him and how you can't not love him and be with every cell of your being practically, right? Like it's a chemical thing.
Yeah.
And how God loves us that way. And that whole imagery, what popped in my head is actually Nate getting in trouble for using Michael W. Smith's song Above All at Bob Jones. He got demerits for God thought of me.
That's right.
Above all.
That's a heresy.
Yeah. It was a heresy.
That blew my mind when you told that story at the podcast. I was oh my word. Of course that's radical for these people. But that's exactly it. They don't, that's too much.
Yeah.
They see God as a boss, as a manager. Then there's a transaction.
Yes.
They don't see God as a parent, as a loving parent. is it just blows their mind.
As a mother on top of, I mean, if it's going to be a parent, it's got to be a dad, an authoritarian, cold, crackdown on you, spare it the rod, spoil it the child, blah, blah.
Not a mother.
Breastfeeding
that,
mother.
Yeah. Yeah. That is ever present practically.
Right.
Oh, bless him.
So the disconnect is, I mean, from your own perspective, it's happening in your own mind as your eyes are kind of being open to a new way of of approaching and seeing the divine. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sure that's developing the discomfort within you. Was there also some external disconnect as well? Was your new perspective, was that starting to like come out of you?
Yeah. Oh yeah. In class. I mean, there was a board member's son who was depressed, and it was the same old thing that all of us were wrestling with when we were there. It was in that sense very typical, except that he was a board member's son. Mm-hmm. And I had a stack of books on my desk by Jeff Van Vonderen called Tired of Trying to Measure Up. I bought a dozen of them and I was giving them away. And I gave one to him. And his dad did not like that.
Oh, I feel like fundamentalism is like, you should always be striving to measure up. Right. That should be your life goal. Right. How can you tell someone to take it easy on that kind of a thing?
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, how dare you? And so that went to Darren Lawson. And at the same time that happened, that's when I had got the memo. Isaac was, bless Isaac, was 2.5. And the CDC, the campus daycare said that they wanted, it was called a CDC. That I was to sign over legal permission for him to get spanked, and I was not going to do that. So I wrote an opposite memo that they are not allowed to spank. So this all happened kind of in the same time. So while I gave that book away to my student, and I said no to the campus daycare for spanking, and I was publishing my dissertation, all of these things came to this meeting with the dean, Darren Lawson, if you want to... cut that out, you can, but Darren Lawson.
Nope. And, names are staying in.
Yeah. And he had, you know, he confronted me on all those things in the same meeting. And that was the October 16th. I'll never forget it. 2006. It was this terrible day. Mm. And, I could feel that the end was coming by the way he treated me. It was bad. Just mansplaining, you know, condescending, all of those things. And I couldn't do anything right at that point. Mm. Typical for leaving high control groups where they just kind of pile on all the sins.
So they're upset that you're not okay with spanking. You're telling kids they don't need to try and strive to constantly be enough. And you are having work published. You are intelligent. Mm-hmm. You are moving forward in the academic world. All of that is a threat. I had also heard somewhere too that they called you out for being an egalitarian or something.
That was a few months before this. Isaac. Bless Isaac. He's the main feature in the story. All I remember, it was summer and he had just had a really, really, really stinky diaper. And so I was walking past our van and I thought, oh, I'll just change him there. And I'd taken care of him and I had the stinky diaper in my hand and I was walking to go throw it away. And Pete Davis on piano faculty, not my colleague per se, confronted me on the sidewalk and said, so-and-so said you and Grant have an egalitarian marriage. What do you have to say about that? And I said, yeah. And again, I'm here holding this child, this little infant in the stinky diaper. I'm like, yeah, well, that you can't. And he just kind of stammered. He didn't really say anything. And eventually it came up that he arranged for a meeting with my authority, which was my chairman, DeWitt Jones, and Pete and Grant and me. And the whole meeting was, Grant might remember more than I do. I still don't know what we were meeting about. So we have an egalitarian marriage. And
Outside this circle and don't know that term, it just means having an equal relationship.
Right.
For men and women, no one's ruling over the other. That
right.
Is,
and we both make the decisions together. And if one of us hates an idea, we don't do it.
Yeah. Just treating each other as equals. No one's in charge of the other person. No, that's a problem.
It's not that. It's not that frightening or scary or
But to them, that is like, it's fascinating to know how horrifying that is. That a man who's not an authority over you, but just knowing that you are in a, none of his business, but knowing you are in a marriage where a man is not in charge of you and doesn't tell you what to do.
And you know what? I used to bring this up in class at Bob Jones all the time about when, because the male, you know, in speech classes, you had a lot of preacher boys, and we would talk about, I don't know how it would come up. I guess we talked about feminism. And I said, you know, there are things that women have more expertise on than men.
No, instance, that's impossible.
Right. I said, for
men
instance,
know everything about everything.
If there's a decision to be made, and I would say this about breastfeeding, my husband's not going to be making that decision.
But he knows by osmosis. Right. He's a man. He just knows everything about everything.
He just
God gives
them
divine insight.
Oh, it did. I think it blew their mind. I don't know. It did shut them up. Maybe because I said breast, it scared them. You know, that's another story. Oh, that's another story.
Oh, okay. This is getting juicy, Go-Go.
Maybe I should get.
This is Michelle from Tulsa, Oklahoma. You're listening to Full Mutuality.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from the Dauntless Media Collective. If you enjoy what you're hearing, we think you'll also enjoy some of our other shows, which you can find by visiting dauntless.fm. Here's a sample from one of them.
All right.
Okay. Welcome to the Thereafter Podcast, a place where we explore life on the other side of faith change.
We're here to break down the binaries, deconstruct the dualities, and wander through what it looks like to live in the gray.
In church, we were told that life after leaving would be a bitter wasteland of unfulfilling hedonism, but we've discovered quite the opposite.
There's actually a vibrant community of people on the other side of faith who are finding and co-creating space for hope and healing.
Come along as we explore the all too often uncharted expanse of evangelicalism, evolving faith, and the life thereafter.
Well,
saying the word breast triggered a memory.
Yeah.
This is, you're not supposed to say these kinds of words among fundamentalists.
So Gavin is my second child. And when we were, because my first miscarriage and Isaac, I had four losses total, one of them being the stillbirth. So that when we were getting ready to have, we wanted to have a second child. You know, it's a lot of nerves and I was scared. So I put a post up on my blog that said, it was called Pencils Are All Sharpened. And it was a prayer. I said, I've got the book ready. Siblings Without Rivalry was the name of the book. And I have another book ready, which was called Adventures in Tandem Nursing. So that there's not a rivalry for mom's attention. It was to nurse both a toddler and a infant. Well, I just posted a link to the book on Amazon, and the cover of the book is a little cartoon mommy with a superhero cape on, and she's flying through the air. There are no boobies on top of the cover. Okay. It's all modest. You can delete that word if that's too much. There are none, but some young man saw my prayer in January of 2006, clicked on Adventures in Tandem Nursing, and somehow, according to Darren Lawson, stumbled into pornography.
Oh, you did it by talking about nursing. The slippery slope from a woman nursing to a man in pornography. It's amazing to me sexualized
so
women
I had to take
are in that.
Yeah.
My God. I'm looking
and
at the cover right now.
He got DAPC'd and he lost his student leadership position. And I don't think he'd listen to this, but I know who he is.
Amazing how they'll blame women for anything a man thinks in his own head because a woman's problem.
It's dehumanizing of everybody involved.
Yeah.
It's dehumanizing of women because it makes women objects.
Right.
and it's dehumanizing of men because
yes, it takes they can't away control themselves.
Their right. Yeah. It takes away their ability, their autonomy, their ability to think and control their thought processes. Yeah, all of it is
absolutely correct.
They like to talk about how we are so distinct from animals.
Yeah.
And yet,
right. And yet, that's a good point.
We can't seem to rise above our animalistic mm-hmm. behavior.
And the fruit of the spirit is self-control, but somehow men have zero self-control, but yet they're supposed to be the leaders. Like, it's all of it is just doesn't make any logical
sense. It's twisted.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely twisted.
So I'm looking at the cover of this book right now. It is The Adventures in Tandem Nursing.
Oh, okay.
It is...
Nate's trying to imagine how he goes from that to porn. He's like, let me see this picture.
Oh, no.
It is... You can't try.
No!
It's like a pencil art clearly done by a talented artist, however done in the style. Yeah, essentially to mimic what like maybe a 7-year-old or a 10-year-old might draw.
Mm-hmm.
It is not in any way. But here's the thing though, and I'm not, while I am inclined to disbelieve the student, there's also a part of me that recognizes that at certain ages, anything this was probably a young adult, not a teenager, but still, you know, puberty hits a different point.
Pathologize the fact that you're also hormonal, you know what I mean? Like,
well, that's right. True.
But
that's
also
absolutely true.
Yes.
I mean, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're thinking of sex a lot at that age. It's normal. It's developmentally normal that anything could turn you on.
And, I'm going to plug my computer in. Keep talking.
Yeah. Yeah. And also to your point where I was going with that as well is when so many things are completely and totally off limits, the most innocuous thing can potentially set us off.
Right.
Right. Like, in
a cartoon.
Yeah, like a cartoon. When we don't have a framework for any kind of healthy sexuality, anything and everything becomes a potential outlet for sexual expression.
Absolutely.
Well, it's just so interesting the number of like conservative men who end up on Ashley Madison. Like, it's interesting how disproportionately represented the people who rail against porn are in the most, you know, not right. just, it's not even about the porn. It becomes about infidelity. It becomes about the most dishonest kind of betrayal stuff that you could come up with. And it's like, yeah, this clamp down on anything sexual and like turn everything into shame really ends up distorting dudes mm-hmm. who
yeah,
are
and lest we sound like we are vilifying pornography. I mean, look,
Ashley Madison is not.
No, exactly. That's not what that exactly. is. And that was the point I was going to make. Ashley Madison is not a porn website.
It is how to cheat on your, basically cheat on your spouse, find someone to cheat on your spouse with. Like that's what that is.
So that was a little detour.
it was a detour.
But it's relevant to help kind of set the stage for the type of environments that fundamentalism and by extension evangelicalism at large can create. Right.
The lack of mutuality in mm-hmm. all of that, it fits. Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead, Nate.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, I found myself in similar environments even after evangelicalism even after fundamentalism working mm-hmm. for an evangelical church.
Right.
One of the news items that's sort of like been in the headlines a little bit recently is our new Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. And the fact that he has Covenant Eyes installed on all of his...
We had a whole conversation, Nate and I, about Covenant Eyes. That's a big thing inside evangelicalism. Yeah.
It's the same software that my old church used for all of our staff, and we had our accountability partners. Another detour, but how absolutely bizarre and unhealthy to make your son responsible, your teenage son... responsible for your internet porn use.
That is
or even that, vice versa. Like just yeah, that or, whole or even setup the other way is, around. Yeah.
Yeah. What that I, just
mm-mm. I, yeah. As a parent, I would not want to know I would not want that kind of involvement. I would say, you know what? Talk to your sex ed teacher.
Just the amount of control and inappropriate crossing over of lines around this topic that ends up with such a thing inside evangelicalism, inside fundamentalism even more. I mean, inside fundamentalism, I'm thinking like the spy culture, like the fact that somebody was looking at your blog and scanning for any, like, was this a thing where people like just constantly following everything you put up to come with you?
Well, that's how, that's part of how I got into trouble when I was at the university. Somebody,
your matrix, you had listed the matrix.
Somebody was here. Looking at my my MySpace page
back in the day.
And Dalton claimed that it was somebody outside the university concerned about my spiritual well-being.
No one does that except them.
No. Even my fundamentalist church, they wouldn't know. My fundamentalist pastor growing up wouldn't know what MySpace was.
No. The summer we left, someone who was working for the Dana Women's office told me she didn't know I was in trouble, but or anything, you know, she said flat out, yeah, my job is to look at everybody's MySpace and social media. She needs social media, but whatever, you know, their blogs to make sure nothing's going on. That was her job. She was a detective. She's what she called herself.
That's something I feel like that might be a distinctive, like when I try like between evangelicalism and fundamentalism, there's a lot in common, but like some little distinctives for me is the level at which they monitor you inside a fundamentalist culture, and the where like you're accountable for every single thing, like they just scan through everything you say and do to find something to try and get you on something
you're doing is wrong. Let me see if I can figure it out. It's like that list that Rachel got from Ross and Friends of everything that was wrong with her. That's what it feels like, you know, like why are you doing that? That's a creepy thing.
And so as you were on your way out, you felt that list was getting built up against you.
So when it was the conversations with my students, it was my son, they're not being allowed to spank him, it was the dissertation, and they just tumbled. I mean, there were all kinds of things. Were you in church Sunday? They said, you know, Lonnie Polson asked me, we need to know about that. And did you do this? We need to know. It was all this. It was just tumbling until in May 2007, Gary Weir and Stephen Jones asked us to write a statement of our, and this is a fun one, sin theology. Which doesn't make any sense. That's sin theology. That's not a thing.
No.
We're weird.
Theology is your belief in God. That's what that means.
So I said to Grant, I said, I think what they really mean is our sanctification, what we think about sanctification. So I'm going to write a document about the female. I'm going to write a document about sanctification. Grant, you know, edited it. My brother with a Master's of Arts in theology looked at it. Another local pastor who's got an MDiv from Bob Jones, he looked at it. So, I mean, it was legit. And we turned it in. And Gary Weir and Stephen Jones emailed us a few weeks later and said, we have some concerns. Can we meet?
Oh, boy.
We were in Florida at Disney World when we got that email.
Oh, God.
Remember it? And so we were like, this is it. We went and had the meeting and they handed us this document, 6 pages long, single spaced, and they gave us one copy. Of course, they handed it to Grant. I said to Grant, may I see it for a second? They're talking about something. I asked if I could see it, and I went to the last page because I knew that's where the punch would be. And there it was. Your statement, while orthodox, your statement is orthodox. If you cannot keep your position, if you cannot hold your position and keep from, that was it, communicating it to students, colleagues, and others at a distance from the university, we must come to a parting of ways.
If you're not quiet about your position on sin theology, but wait, if it's why is there a problem with you?
So
saying,
I said, what does this mean?
What does that mean?
What does this mean? And Gary Weir, no lie, went, he shrugged. Since it's a podcast, I'll tell you, he shrugged. And I said, no, wait a minute. I don't want to mess this up. This is something new. What does this mean here? This is a new part. And he shrugged again. He wouldn't tell
us. You're going to kick me out. We're going to have to part ways if I express, if I
Wait, others at a distance from the, is that you all? I mean, is it, you know, is it?
You're a teacher for crying out loud. No. Well, you're not allowed to give Cynthia all, like, what? I don't understand.
No, I didn't either. And they just wouldn't tell us. But that's, see, that's how they do it at a high control groups is that they won't give you the satisfaction of a clear break or a clear reason, because then you can, you have power. You have some agency. If you can argue that.
That's so strange. Like they thought they were going to get you, obviously, with writing out your statement on sin theology. Like, now we're going to show her she doesn't believe in sin the proper way. And then they read through it all and they cannot find anything in there that bothers them.
Right.
So they've come up with some weird, like, it's just, they have to say we're going to part ways over something. And then it's like, if you publicly, whatever, but not
you summed
clear.
It up.
It's just, it's so strange. Mm-hmm. So you just, at that point, you're just like, oh yeah, we're doomed.
Yeah. And so then, and the next day, that was a Friday the 13th. The next day, Grant said, I saw a listing at North Greenville. For a tenor on voice faculty. What do you think I should do? He poked his head out of the shower and said that to me. And I was just numb. I was like, I don't know. Okay, whatever. But within 10 days, he had applied, had an interview, an audition, and an offer. And
that was him knowing that they were going to try and get rid of you both and, you know, wanting to make sure you guys would be taken care of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we went to the Burger King because they had a play place there and the kids could play. And we just sat there and stared and talked. Can we do this? Is this possible? And that was a Wednesday. And we said, yep, we can do it. We decided, I think it was a Wednesday. It might have been a Tuesday. And that night, kids were in bed. And I said, Grant, I'm going right now to move out of my office. I don't want to do it when people are around. And so I took all night and I did it in the dark. And I moved out of my office, which is so weird.
But like, and so that's even weirder in a normal environment. But I feel like at Bob Jones, what they do when anyone is quote unquote kicked out is they have someone follow them around as they get ready to leave, right? They chaperone them.
Right. Well, that's if a student, I don't know what they would have done with me. I mean, I did wipe my office computer clean. I didn't have anything on it. But I didn't want them thinking that there was something on it. So I had already cleaned and I just left. And as soon as the sun came up, I was driving down Wade Hampton, stopped and got an Egg McMuffin and
wow.
So there's a there's something I want to point out. The fact that you mentioned, you know, you noted how weird this is to be leaving your place of employment in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
I don't want to take away from how absolutely bizarre that is.
Yeah.
But I also think it's important to note, like, so I read this book by Jocelyn Zichterman a little while back called I Fired God, which is basically her documenting the life that she lived inside the IFB and then her escape from fundamentalism. And what I found fascinating is the escape narrative. And how similar it is, how when people leave these extremely high control religious environments, leaving in the middle of the night for your own personal safety is so crucial. And you know that, like, the fundamentalist mindset will twist that into, like, you know, men love darkness.
Live in the
light,
be creature. Yeah.
Your deeds are evil, blah, blah, blah. Right. But the reason that people do this is because they fear for their safety. Mm-hmm. And they can't do it in broad daylight because everybody's watching and the world that you're inside,
yeah,
we have no concept of the outside world.
None.
It's non-existent. So we don't know that we could leave in broad daylight because to us, this is our world. Mm-hmm. We have to leave under the cover of darkness.
And I think I remember Jocelyn's story, and I do remember feeling a parallel with that. She and I might have talked about that. Now that I think about it, I'd have to go back and reread it. But yeah, this is, you're right. It's not bizarre. And I mean, if you've listened to Leah Remini and her exodus from Scientology, it's similarly,
yeah,
traumatic.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming, like, once you left Bob Jones, it created a cascade of, like, did it affect your friendships? Did it affect the people in your life, your church life?
Oh, yeah.
Everything out. I mean, I'm assuming once you're in fundamentalism, it's kind of all tied in together pretty tightly.
As soon as we decided, and I left my office, we first wrote our students, then we wrote our colleagues, and then we sent the letter of resignation to the administration. And of course, that was all strategic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And in that process, we told our pastor, Danny Brooks, at Heritage. Oh, okay. And at first, Danny was very supportive. He even said, you know, they changed the contract on you when they added that line, others at the university, away from the university. That's adding to your contract. You were right to leave. That was in August, but by October, he had changed his tune. And he wrote us this very long, very long email with lots of Bible verses about how we were wrong. And I think somebody got to him.
You don't change 180 somebody and then write them a long, long thing about it.
With Bible verses. He had to prove something. I don't know what it was, but there was something he had to prove. So we were looking forward to being free. You know, just being us.
Yeah.
And we were looking forward to getting involved in church. I volunteered for a Sunday school class. And then in that email, he basically said to Grant, you can't sing anymore in church because people, when they look at you, all they're going to see is you're leaving Bob Jones. And we were like, what?
Do you know if this church had connections to
Bob
Jones?
Oh, gosh, yes. It's in their constitution. It's in their constitution.
I remember attending Heritage, too. That was one of the churches that I liked to go to because it wasn't Mount Minnick. I kind of wonder, too, about the possibility of
money,
them being some money exchanging hands, potentially being removed from the approved list of churches that students could attend. And attendance at a church of Bob Jones students was big. It was a big deal. That was a large school that was a huge potential population draw for your own church.
And think about, like, when I think of fundamentalism, one of the first things that comes to my mind, and I wasn't in it, but just from I have foster parents that were in it. I know people who are in fundamentalism. Mm-hmm. And what comes to mind for me is that the young people end up bleeding out, and it ends up being fundamentalism ends up being a lot of older people that just stick around. And so to have a fundamentalist church with an infusion of young people is probably rare, probably very special.
And a very college town kind of thing. Yeah, I agree. And I know he did. And I'm sure someone got to him. And Grant wrote him right back immediately and said, look, Danny, I don't know if you're right. I don't know if you're wrong, but if I'm not good enough to sing solos, then we're not good enough to sing in choir. And Camille isn't good enough. And, you know, we don't mean that, but she's not good enough to teach Sunday school either. So we're out.
Right.
And, I drove all the way. I had just gotten the curriculum for the 4-year-old Sunday school class. I drove all the way to Simpsonville to give it back to the lady, sobbing the whole way. I mean, I remember I'm going to start crying again because we thought it shouldn't have been that way. But, you know, that's okay. We are in a lovely church community now, and it's healthy and it's a good place. So it hurts.
You know, one of the things that I'm trying to process is the people that I miss that I've let go of, who were not good for me. I mean, like, situations like friends that I've had to let go of, church communities, like people that were precious to me, mentors, close relationships. And the reason I let go is an extreme situation happened that shed a lot of light, you know, in different scenarios. I'm not thinking of more than one scenario where it's like multiple things that kind of let you know this is really bad for you.
Right.
And even though you go away and you walk away with, that was the right decision, it doesn't really stop the grief of that loss.
And it is grief. It is. Mm-hmm. It is. That's exactly what it is. And it takes time. I don't know that it's ever completely healed, but you come to an acceptance of it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I think, and I guess I'm bringing that up because if there's people, you know, listening in who've left communities, left toxic environments, I guess I was having a conversation with my daughter the other night and talking about the loss of friendship, and and then giving her a speech about how, you know, if you're close friends with someone for a long time and you have to let go of that, be patient with yourself if it takes a long time to get over the sadness of it. And then I was like, I think I'm talking to myself. You know, when you say something and you're like, self-reflection is a good thing, I guess. I'm like thankful that I'm able to see it, you know, right away as I'm speaking it and be like, oh, yeah, I need to hear this message for myself. But I think, you know, there's a part of you that goes, well, intellectually, I know that this wasn't good. So then I should just catch up, you know, and be over it. But like, if things still make you sad, you know, if things, even as you're repeating them years and years later, you know, you thought I was tearing up just thinking about it. Yeah. That's okay. That's totally fine. That's a healing normal. And the more time you invested and the more it meant to you, the worse and the harder that heavier that grief.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And I know you're right. And I'm thank you for saying it though, you know, again, because it is heavy. And I do miss those people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey everyone, I'm Jessica from the Leaving the Village podcast. I wanted to take a moment to say thank you for tuning into this show. We're so grateful that you've decided to spend your time with us. Seriously, Dan, Gail, Kathleen, Nate, Scott, and the rest of us here at the Dauntless Media Collective couldn't produce content like the show you're listening to without your support. I'd also like to invite you even further into the conversation. Right now, there are some great discussions happening over in the Dauntless Media Collective Discord server. If you're interested in chatting with other folks who are deconstructing and decolonizing the oppressive traditions they came from, please feel free to hop onto the server. If you don't know what Discord is, it's a place where communities can gather online for chatting on a wide variety of topics. In our Discord server, we have channels devoted to general deconstruction conversations, some meme sharing, therapeutic venting about whatever religious bullshit you're currently dealing with, and even a channel specifically devoted to talking about the latest episode of the podcast you're listening to right now. I hope you'll join us. You can log in directly to the Dauntless server by clicking on the link in the show notes or heading to dauntless.fm and clicking on the link in the top banner. See you there.
Yeah, there's a lot of loss that comes with leaving an environment. I don't want to pivot too much because I think it's good to sit in our thoughts about grief, but I'll let people take that as they will with their scenario. But I'm wondering, I want to focus on something about your story that I guess for me, I love.
Yeah, so
it.
If you do need to take a moment, press pause.
Okay,
yes. And then come back.
Okay, there we go.
Now here we are.
Here we are. On an upbeat note, and I don't like doing that at the I guess, because some people try and bypass the yucky feelings, you know, just by moving on to something happier, and I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. But since we're a podcast, like Nate said, you can pause, think through, and then come back. But I'm encouraged by your story, knowing your husband and you as a team went through this together, have gone through a journey as a couple. Do you have any thoughts on that? You're in an egalitarian marriage. Should be a bad marriage. This is not God's design for you, Dr. Camille. What were you thinking?
It's funny because we used to have a Westie, a dog. I don't know if you've ever seen a Westie. Who was a terrier who was fearless. That dog and you know, it's a Scottish breed, and Grant is, you know, got Welsh and German heritage, and he's the same way. I mean, that man is fearless. And if somebody is coming after me, he is a total watchdog about it. Mm. And it's a wonderful feeling. It's a wonderful feeling. So that when, you know, if it's Darren Lawson, if it's,
did men try and tell him to put his wife in order? Did he get those?
Word. Oh, yes. All over the place. Oh, gosh. Yeah. There's a guy up in North Carolina that didn't like something I said. And he, you know, oh, gosh, that happens all the time. What am I saying? Still happens.
I'm saying this out loud because it's funny. It's funny when a man goes to another man and says, you need to put your wife in order. And I'm just like,
what? Right, say, if you have an issue, you know, you can talk to her about it. She's right there, you know, or whatever. Yeah. but he's got a list on his phone right now, notes that if someone, because of this, you mentioned the book that I have coming up, and I have a book that's being reviewed by a university press. He is loaded for bear if someone comes after me for that book. Mm. I mean, and I think he's got about a dozen points, and it's lovely to look at. So he's got my back. So that's nice.
I relate that's to awesome. Your husband. That's a lot of my personality as well. The mama bear, sort of like protective of my people. Yeah.
Mm.
Wow. Mm. And like, how beautiful is that? I mean, I'm just thinking when you lose everything around you, your community, you know, you guys left together.
Yeah.
You guys have that Bob Jones experience you can talk about together. Remember that?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. We went through that together.
Even to the point now, I don't know about you, Nate, but, Grant and I have a hard time because of the BJU arriving late or arriving just on time for something. We're always early. Which is really embarrassing with parties or something.
So
we'll sit in the car and wait. And we're sitting there saying, yep, this is where we are, you know.
So after leaving Bob Jones, after leaving the fundamentalist world, I worked really hard on this. There are still certain facets of my life that I feel it creeping in.
Yeah.
But yes. I make mental notes like, showing up 15 minutes late to a party is a good thing.
That's right. It is a good thing.
Do that. And I started to take some, you know, context clues from various people that I've learned from. Like if people are waiting for you to start something, show up early. But if like, for example, a social gathering, never be the first person to show up at somebody's house, because especially if you don't really know the person or if they're like, it just gets like, what do you do when you're there early?
I tell my colleagues at Furman, I say this often, look, y'all, because if I do something like that, and I said, you can take the girl out of fundamentalism, but I'm sorry, you can't always take the fundamentalism out of the girl. And they're very sweet about it. They just, you know, they giggle and bring me back.
Yeah.
But you need friends. Everybody needs friends.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to let go of some of those, some of those habits. Mm-hmm. So speaking of, you're working on a book, and I don't want you to have to like spill any tea before
I can do a little tea
is fully brewed.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Let's what are appetites for the kind of tea that we want to check out.
Okay. So I have, it's called Clandamentalism. Race, religion, and hate intersect. And you can kind of see the premise from the title, really. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But Montgomery, Alabama gets credit for being the birthplace of the Confederacy and the birthplace of the Civil Rights Movement. But it's also the birthplace of fundamentalism. And it's really the birthplace of Klandamentalism, because the Ku Klux Klan in the 1920s and fundamentalism were one. And nobody wants to talk about it, but I've got the receipts.
Yeah.
And the book is a confession, because it's easy if you're white, especially if you're white, heterosexual, cisgendered, middle class, to just ignore all of the hate that's in our background, but it's there and it needs to be exposed.
Yeah. So that connection point. I'm guessing. Did you coin the term Klandamentalism?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I do find that funny, especially coming from Bob Jones and knowing that we had a dorm building that I lived in. I placed a request to be moved out of that building.
Oh, I remember you said that in the podcast.
Yeah, I had it denied. It wasn't a sufficient reason, of course, because, you know, nothing's really a sufficient reason.
A non-white person didn't want to be under a Klansman dorm, and that's a problem. Like, Nate, why? What kind of unreasonable requests are you making? Come on.
But does it surprise you?
Oh, yeah. No. But he was the Grand Dragon in Alabama, and I got some stuff on him, too.
I mean, just that alone, that he would be the name of one of their dorms says quite a bit. I mean, and then there's the Billy Graham / Bob Jones stuff, which, I mean, you have some insight probably on
that. So what happened was, on Good Friday in 1960, so that would have been April 13th, 1960, in his syndicated column, Billy Graham pleaded with Southern white Protestants to integrate. He said, Jim Crow must go, which was the slogan of the civil rights movement. So for him to say that is kind of dramatic. Apparently Eisenhower asked him to do that.
Okay.
So, and he did, and he made a good case. It's almost tame. You know, when we read it now, it feels very, very tame.
Duh.
Yeah. I'm like, duh is right. But Bob Sr. was very angry about it. And so on Easter morning, he went to his radio station, WMUU, and he preached his segregation scriptural. Did you have to read that, Nate, as a requirement?
I did not.
Okay.
Thankfully. At least I don't recall having to read it.
We did. At our age. In 1986 is the first year we had to sign that we read it.
Yeah. Mm. No, we got the...
It's his apologetics for why segregation is good.
Right.
Right? Pretty much?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's
awful, too. It's really awful.
We got to watch the... Triple Sticks going on Larry King Live.
You watched that in like orientation or something?
Yeah, and
that's weird.
I also had seen it previously because my English teacher in high school was connected to the Jones family, and we watched it basically the day after it aired in class. So I got to see it twice, once in high school and once in I guess freshman year.
That was a weird conversation. I mean, just when he said we did it because we didn't want to have a one world government or something. That was weird. It was weird. Now I understand it. Yeah. And now that I've done my Klan research, I understand what he's saying. But at the time, I didn't.
That also kind of alludes to the, you know, when you're mentioning the one world government, mm-hmm. that alludes to that evangelical fear of the coming end times, the mm-hmm. Antichrist setting up his one world government. And if you're mm-hmm. unfamiliar with any of this, there's a whole series of books written by Tim LaHaye and Jerry B. Jenkins.
Yeah, that's right. Tim LaHaye is a 1950 BJU grad.
He is.
There you go.
A grad who was very upset that some university was giving him honor and tribute after he died.
After Martin Luther King Jr. I forgot what university it was that was doing a tribute to Martin Luther King Jr. after he passed away.
We've brought it up on a previous podcast. Okay.
Yeah, and Tim LaHaye wrote an angry letter to that university.
It shows the theology, you know, just like, you know, I think of end times and rapture theology being so cartoony and so non-founded in anything in the Bible. It's become its own genre, but it's amazing how many decisions currently that are made based on a lot of lore.
Foreign policy.
Oh, yeah.
Shall we go on?
Very relevant even to right now and world events and war and how we'll back genocide as long as we could speed up the rapture. Like, it's just really bizarre, weird,
it's nuts.
Messed up stuff.
It's nuts.
It's like, let's bring about Jesus coming back and a destruction of the world. That's what our goal is. That's what we're excited for. And it's scary to see a group of people like that running in U.S. government. I can go on, but
I know it is very scary.
Second in line to the presidency. Like,
he's a speaker of the
although
House,
the last, the previous yeah, administration, yeah. Mike Pence was.
Yeah, that's
first
right.
In line,
that so. Was my
so
initial thought. Bless him. Oh goodness.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think for people who don't have. If you didn't grow up in the U.S., because that's me in Canada, and I think anyone listening outside of the U.S., I think the influence of evangelicalism on the running of the U.S. government is sometimes unknown because people are unfamiliar with evangelical culture. And so when you see decisions being made and stuff happening, you don't understand what's behind it, what is influencing or motivating it. But as an evangelical, you're like, oh, yes, you can see those, mm-hmm.
you
those
know
dots connecting.
Right. And, you know it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like almost a knee-jerk response, or you know, mm-hmm. you see a chart, a timeline on somebody's wall, and
yes. Oh my god! Oh man, I remember that when I was in youth group when we watched A Thief in the Night. We
Isn't
had a youth group lock in. We watched A Thief in the Night, and then our youth pastor put up the chart.
I read someone say, when you were young, did you imagine dying by guillotine, or were you not evangelical?" And that was the question. And I was like, oh,
my brother would like that joke. Yeah, that's good.
I think it was April A. Joy. He does a lot of great TikToks.
Well, that painting of the rapture, schlocky painting, that was in my dentist's office. I can't remember. I think it was in when we were in Tulsa. And I remember, I mean, looking back, that's just weird that was in the dentist's office.
That is super weird. It should be super weird, but in so much of the U.S., this is very normal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for anybody who lives where I live, and are confounded by this because I live in a deep blue state.
Sure.
That like the when I talk about the world I come from, people are like, "Oh, those crazy religious nuts." I'm like, "They're running our government. Wake up!" Yeah. Like I know, yeah. I know. Over here, you know, we're sweeping our elections, but. Like, look at what's happening at the national level. Yeah. Look at what's happening at the states that I lived in for a few years. Yeah. Not to get too like caught up in politics.
I love politics.
On the show, but
so.
Yeah, I.
But I know you probably don't want it. That's not.
No. It's totally fine. Yeah. I just.
It's important.
Yeah,
it's important.
It
stuff.
Is important.
Yeah. I think you know that's definitely. I think those of us who do have any sort of fundamentalist or evangelical background have a lot of insight into a lot of the runnings of what's going on in government, what's motivating things, and we know a lot of the codes, and we can crack a lot of
that. It's the code. Outsiders, yeah. There's a code that you can feel it.
Like the one world government, what does that mean, and how does it connect to racism? Well, that's a nice way to convince. And this is you. I'd love to hear your thoughts, but mine are like that's a way to convince evangelicals that it's not about racism by right. pretending uniting different groups is the problem because it's going to bring about this one world government, which is going to be the Antichrist right. and the end of the world. And like, so this is we're supposed to fight this one world government. And meanwhile, you know, when you'd scratch and chip away at the fake veneer on top, mm-hmm. you see that it's about uniting. You know, this keeping segregation. It's about racism. It's, mm-hmm. Does your book uncover some of those?
Oh, yes. Oh, my goodness. Yes. It's how Bob Jones College came to be in that climate mm-hmm. and what anxieties and stressors were forming in Montgomery that motivated them. So I start with Bob Jones' life, Bob Jones Sr.'s life. From when his ancestors first arrived in Charleston through, I stop about 1946.
Okay.
Cause I had to stop somewhere, but I mean, that's kind of also his decline. He started to kind of stay home a little bit more. He wasn't talking mm-hmm. as much. So mm-hmm. I look at his sermons cause I'm a speech right. critic. So I look at what he said, but also on what's underneath it all. Like I've got his grades. From college.
Wow.
I can send you a copy of the transcript if you'd like. It's really.
Wow.
It's real. If you like. It's very.
That's fascinating.
He has no business. He had no business starting
starting a university. Place of higher education.
Because it was like, wait, let me see if I can get the. It was. Yeah, here it is. His first semester, which he entered Southern University, which was like the Methodist school in Greensboro, Alabama. His first semester, English composition, so EN 101, he got a 47.
Oh my God.
I just shouldn't laugh. Oh, that's so terrible. And if he were my academic advisee, I would say, honey, you need to go get some accommodations. There's something going on here.
Yeah.
His second semester, he got a 21 in Latin.
You should not be starting. Mm-mm. An institute of higher Mm-mm. education.
And you know, there are other things you can do. But being an educator is not one of them.
No, no.
You know, there's plenty of stuff out there.
I wonder if Raymond St. John would have failed him.
That's a fun story.
Oh, I'll say something controversial, but oh, to be a white man.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, no what way. Qualifications right. do you need to start an institute of higher education? Right. Yeah, my Man. White male connection.
I could have started a college.
Right, no,
you're missing the point factor, Nate.
I couldn't have started college, unfortunately.
You are not
I'm missing
a white man.
The skin color.
That's right.
The access to power, basically. Yeah. And to white supremacist
yeah.
approval, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, because he helped Bibb Graves get elected. So
there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Wow. I'll drink to that.
There we go. Yeah, you and Bibb Graves are like this, right?
Oh, yeah. We're tight.
Yeah.
We're buddies.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do have a question. So BJU has popped up in the news fairly recently mm-hmm. For a number of reasons. I believe that there was a situation regarding your state's Secretary of Education,
yes.
Who is a graduate of Bob Jones University.
Right.
Do you mind filling us in a little bit about
that? Ellen Weaver, I don't know the year that she graduated. She has an undergrad in a BA in political science, I believe, if I'm remembering. And she worked with the state GOP for a while. And then somebody got the bright idea that she could be the new superintendent of education for the state. A public education. Well, that requires a master's degree. So she got on the fast track and got a master's degree at Bob Jones. She's a faculty kid. So her parents, both are on staff, and they streamlined her and the whole state's making fun of it. There are memes all over about, you know, would you like a master's degree with that? You know, as they hand some Jesus chicken out the drive-through window. So she has no student teaching time. She's never been in a classroom for any length of time.
And that's the highest office in education in the state of South Carolina, correct?
Right.
My God.
And she's already in the process of, I can send you the news article I just saw this week. She's already in the process of banning certain books.
Of course she is.
And Moms for Liberty are, you know, cheering her on.
Of course they are.
I mean, so that just makes perfect sense.
Right. So there's that bit of news.
And Sachs, I was one of the people that wrote Sachs. There were lots of us who wrote the accrediting body. And they said they looked into it and said everything was fine. But I honestly don't know how much muscle the accrediting agency has. But,
yeah. So it doesn't seem like a whole lot. So that's one bit of news. Yes. We'll link to an article in the show notes. There's also some internal university news. So one of the things that you do as well, in addition to the where you were blogging about your own story, and we'll link to that in the show notes as well. But you also continue to curate a blog of information about the university and stuff that's happening in the school right now. Right. So you're still in touch with current students,
current students, some current employees.
Okay.
Tell me stuff all the time. Because
so
they know
Bob Jones, you should be nervous. There are snitches, not just that you create for yourselves, but outside snitches.
They know I won't tell their identity.
Their names.
Right. Yeah. So, and I can mask some of the details in such a way. And I keep it. I keep everything.
Yeah.
So that's also a problem. But what happened is that a year ago this week, Steve Pettit let it be known that he may not get his contract renewed.
So Steve Pettit is was the president of the university.
Yes.
This time last year.
For many years, right? Or a few years? Or how long?
15 or 14.
Yeah,
14
or 15, yeah.
Okay, so like almost 10 years.
Almost.
Close to that.
And he was very, you know, he's doesn't have an academic degree. You know, he's not a professional academic, but he was an evangelist and that's what they like. And he was cordial and you know, charming. He was a charming man.
In the fundamentalist world, if you could place the fundamentalist spectrum on sort of a left-right internally, he leaned probably a little bit left within the fundamentalist spectrum. Yeah. Now, to be completely fair, that is far right of far right in the,
I mean, that's
greater
like
world, but
that's like a centrist person in the U.S. If you put them in Canada, they'd be a right winger. Like it's like what a left winger is in the U.S.
So contextually, So Steve Pettit was like, I guess, friendlier to newer generations, quote unquote. And I remember, I mean, he was still not in the picture when I was there, but I do remember the Steve Pettit evangelistic team, and I remember him being very endearing to students and younger, you know, younger generations, as opposed to somebody like
Bob Jones III,
right?
Yeah, who's
do you guys think that was a move? I'm curious, both of your takes. Do you think that's a move to try and revitalize, like keep people attendance from sinking at Bob Jones? Do you think they got someone who's
I think it was at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they at the beginning. Sure. Yeah. And I think it may have caused some jealousy.
Jealousy
from the old guard.
Oh, okay. Right.
That he was
that they couldn't liked. Attract young people. And
right.
He
well, and he was liked.
Attracting.
And he was liked.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then the whole
Fashion shelf.
Yes.
Controversy happened.
Yes.
And that made some old guard very upset. And there, you know, there are other things that made people upset. Whatever.
Yeah.
It's in a sense, BJU has lost its brand.
Yeah.
And if you're now, if you're a stinker fundamentalist, you're just not going to go to Bob Jones.
Right.
That's generally not where you're going to go. You're going to go probably, if you're a very right wing cultural conservative, you're going to go to Liberty. Or if you're a hard nosed fundamentalist, you're going to go to Pensacola or Maranatha, and there's just no brand left for Bob Jones.
Is Hiles Anderson still even in existence?
I don't think it is.
Oh, okay. That's I didn't even realize question. Pensacola was still around. I know, yeah. Clearwater shut down.
Did it? Clearwater. Yes, it did. Yeah.
Clearwater shut down.
And the thing up in Lansdale. Northland shut down.
Mm-hmm. Northland's basically just a camp at this point, right? But like a just
back
a conference
to being
center.
A camp.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're just not going to go to Bob. They lost their brand. And that's how I see it. And that's why I don't, you know, as nice as Alan Benson might be, and he's even more vanilla than Steve Pettit.
He's the new guy,
he's
right?
The new
that's
guy.
Taken over
yeah.
from.
Yeah. So the story was that this whole controversy surrounding a number of different incidents, including this fashion show. So for some context, if you didn't listen to our episode on this, there was a fashion show. It was a new major program at Bob Jones, fashion design, and they hosted a fashion show, and one of the seniors who was presenting their final project had a wrap coat on display. That was, you know, and look, fashion shows are art displays. They are not
exactly. They're not clothing,
right? This isn't what you're going to buy at the mall to wear on a day to day basis. This is an art piece that a student is showing, and they're showcasing, I guess, the life of Christ through this piece.
Was it a Paul Rubens? I can't. Paul Rubens. Did you hear what I just did? That I don't know if you want. You might want to delete that. Yeah. Not Pee Wee Herman. Oh,
right.
Okay. It was an old master's picture of the crucifixion. Maybe you do want to keep that in there. I don't know. and the young man, the model who was wearing it, had a crown that looked like a crown of thorns on, and it was I can't remember what else was going on, but people read it as offensive, as feminine. Is that fair? You think that was the,
I would say it, my,
that's definitely how they read.
That's how they read it. And I would look at it. And I would say it's like it doesn't fit within any particular gender confines.
Right, it looked like an old Louis the 14th
waistcoat
kind of thing. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Not a waistcoat, but longer, whatever they're called.
It looked well done. I mean, you know, the sewing was neat. He had interesting sleeves on some of the other garments.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't personally, I found the way he explained it to be, if I were his teacher, I would have said, you need to say this in a more optimistic way. You're too pessimistic, but that's because the child is a fundamentalist, so he doesn't know optimism. Mm-hmm. But that's a little different kind of critique. But the fashion, I mean, the work was good. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was a beautiful piece. And this became
it's
the
amazing.
Subject.
And it's amazing that where I'm going to go with this. Amazing the things that cause controversy.
Right. So it became the subject of controversy.
I would have never imagined. Like
I don't even really know the reason. Like we're sitting here trying to parse something out. Was it because there was an art piece about Jesus on it? But like the living gallery that they put on every year is in a similar vein. Was it because the coat gave a more traditionally quote-unquote feminine style? But even yes. that is arguable
it's
because
old-fashioned.
Again, like
I mean,
you were mentioning,
right?
You know. Renaissance, yeah, Renaissance or Victorian apparel. It fits within the male.
I mean, have you seen
style.
What Junior used to wear?
I'm gonna guess in today's day and you know, like I feel like the current social climate is one where this need to define
yes,
gender
absolutely.
Roles is intensified.
Absolutely.
Not that it wasn't always a big deal. Not that it always wasn't a big deal in fundamentalism that men are supposed to be exactly like this and women are supposed to be exactly like this. But with terms like non-binary and people acknowledging mm-hmm. that some people don't fall into binaries, I feel like anything that could possibly, yeah. you know, like that seems to be like the default.
Yeah, there's
topic,
there's a,
you know, even more
we're
than
a hair
like
trigger
because. Yeah. Homosexual. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like it, like homosexuality used to be the right. blame everyone top, like the topic, the right. top hot boiling mm-hmm. point where it's like, you know, this upsets traditional gender, everything, because who's going to be the head of your relationship? So then it has to be wrong. But now it's shifted to, you know, and fundamentalists, of course, are still going to go off about gay people. But I feel like in the mainstream, you know, conservative world, it's fear around trans people and it's fear around non-binary. It's this idea that, yeah, that you are not exactly in one or the other camp. And that's so scary. And it's just, it's always dominating media mm-hmm, topics mm-hmm. and like yeah. headlines yeah. and
it's,
discrimination
and
stuff. And I'm like,
book bans,
yeah,
all
that
those
would
book
make
bans
sense.
Are behind, I mean, that's a similar kind mm-hmm. of snowflake quality to all of those protests.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So that's
yeah,
my
so,
guess.
So
like,
we had
right,
that.
Can he, was there something else? Was there something else they didn't like about him? I don't know.
Well, I mean, I don't know what else was going on but
he was liked. He seemed the rules, mm-hmm. according to one board member, the dress code rules were not being enforced. Now, my opinion on
yes.
that is, you're right, they're not being enforced. They all need to go. That's a problem.
Yes.
You know, you don't have a rule if you're not going to enforce it. Because then
right.
it becomes ripe for abuse, and then the disempowered people get picked on, but
mm-hmm.
you know, it's like the pox upon both their houses. They're all rotten. It's all just rotten.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes, it is. And I think so. There's all of this that happened and it turned into this fuel and we have, you know, a few episodes back. If you go back a little bit, you'll see we have, an episode, I think titled All You Need to Know About Bob Jones University, where we talked to our friend Rick Pidcock, who covers the university fairly regularly for Baptist News Global. And, you know, we were sort of analyzing some of the drama mm-hmm. that had been going down and it was in the headlines at the time. I think looking at it now, my question, given everything that went down and like the concerns about the chairman of the board,
yes.
was it John
no
Lewis?
Relation, but yes.
like all of that plus where the university is now. My
how long
analysis.
Does Nate have where he could go back to visit Bob Jones while they're
oh, that-
yeah. How long do I have to like?
Faculty member said it was last. It was the summer. He was giving it a couple years, and he heard that from the finance people.
Hmm.
Their finances. Okay. If you look at what I believe it was the Washington Post laid out for how you judge if a school is financially stable. They don't pass muster because they're not getting enough. They're discounting tuition so much to get people to come
mm-hmm.
that it's not sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They lose out on.
And I do have the numbers on that.
Oh,
so
wow.
that is a big tell. Again, if you cite what the Washington Post says, look for these things to see if a school is going to make it. And then you get this upheaval in the administration. I just don't know. Yeah.
That's a bad sign.
So what, like, I guess my perspective, and I guess you could correct me if you think my assessment of all of this is way off or if I'm close, but I think Bob Jones University is in the, from their perspective, unfortunate, my perspective, very fortunate position of recognizing that for a long time, they were the place to go if you were a quote unquote right. intellectual, like you were saying earlier, or in my case, involved in the arts, right? They were the fundamentalist institution if you wanted excellence in those areas. Rhetoric, intellectualism, the arts. Like, that's where you went if you were a fundamentalist and you wanted those things. If you wanted to double down on your fundamentalism, you had Pensacola and you had Hiles Anderson, you had Maranatha, you had maybe Northland even. But the intellectual and the artistic, the talented, they went to Bob Jones.
The School of Art, Fine Arts is gutted. It's completely gutted.
Is it? Oh, yeah.
So, and I think that's been because of the management. It's just, so you don't go there anymore. They don't have, that's not where you go.
Yeah. So there's nobody really left in fundamentalism, right? Because I can't imagine.
No, Hiles I think you just, from what I remember hearing from Gary Weir, and I heard this through channels, their biggest competition is, actually I heard it from the faculty, meeting minutes. Their biggest competition is the community colleges. So
interesting.
And a lot of kids are staying home because, I mean, it's cheaper.
Yeah.
The tuition at Bob Jones is pretty high. It's pretty expensive. So, it's cheaper to stay home, go to a community college, or go to a public college.
Mm-hmm. Go to a public college. Yeah. So I think,
and I wonder,
No, you're fine. I guess the position that I think Bob Jones is sort of like stuck in right now is trying to regain the student population, and they can't seem to figure out how to do that, but that seems to be the thing that they're looking at, because they're, at the end of the day, they're a university. If they don't have a student population, they have nothing. But they have all of these investors, these stakeholders that are, I say investors, quote unquote, but in terms of the older alumni, churches, pastors, the elders that have this idea of what Bob Jones University should have been, and they're caught in the middle. If they lean towards, you know, trying to attract students, they lose funding from their donors. If they lean towards their donors, they will not attract students any longer.
And so it's doomed. And one of their big donors left the board. Hans Bernard was a big donor.
Oh.
And he left with John Lewis. So see, he was a huge donor. Mm. So, that's...
And when it comes to kids, too, like, I'm thinking, you know, not just even funding, like, okay, you know, it's much more expensive to go to Bob Jones than my community college, but also, I don't know how much stories are getting out there about people being kicked out of Bob Jones and what the degree is worth outside of the fundamentalist world. I don't know if students are starting to realize that paper isn't worth anything. And if they decide they want to make an example out of you, and in that culture, they need to do that with a certain amount of kids to keep everyone in line, your time is wasted and your money is down the drain, and it's going to be so hard to get into another school once you've been expelled. Because, I mean, normal schools don't expel you for no reason.
Right.
So they don't understand, well, the reason you got expelled from a university is because it's nuts. No, that's not what they're going to, you know, it's going to be very hard. It'll, like, ruin your academic.
Yeah, I have chances. A number of friends who were expelled from Bob Jones, and they tried, like, they're not from South Carolina, and they tried to go to their community college or their state school, and their state school rejected them because they have an expulsion on their record. So, well, why would we, you know, admit a student who was expelled from a university? And that's a hard thing to explain. So they have no choice but to, you know, wait a year and then return to Bob Jones if they're allowed to, or go someplace like, you know, you were mentioning North Greenville University or some school that, like, is sympathetic to the plight of the Bob Jones castaways, which aren't necessarily great schools in and of themselves either.
No, they're not. And
just thinking, like, how much a student might be more aware of this than in the past, of just that idea that they can get kicked out. Those stories might be coming out.
I think they are getting repeated. And discuss, like, in podcasts like this, and I do think it helps. There's a lot of expelled or just frustrated students who leave. I mean, I had an email from a student. She's now has graduated from another university, but she was a senior, and she was so frustrated that she emailed me asking for help. Like, what do I do? I got to get out of here. I can't take this anymore. And she, there was, you know, she's a child of alumni. She had all the marks that she should be making it, but she's just, it was just too much. Over and over and over these stories. I hear these stories from people, and it's just,
and you wonder how does a school like that even try? And like, I'm imagining I'm Bob Jones. Like, I am the admin of Bob Jones. And we usually kick out X number of students all the time, mm-hmm. because that's how we keep this culture of fear going. And that's how we let people know we enforce our rules. And it's important that we're in charge and we're the boss. But then when you have very low enrollment and every student counts, like in my head, I'm like, do they start changing things up? Do they still kick out as many kids? Do they have to lock the
rules? Instead of demerits, like, they now do fines.
Oh, they do fines now?
Steve Pettit instituted that.
Wow. Okay. That's interesting.
Isn't it?
You can buy your way. No, but I mean, like,
what happens to the lower income students?
I know.
Well, it shows they're about making money now more than controlling, even, right? Because they're giving the power to the students who have money to stay, right? So that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just, oh,
wow.
I'm sorry. That just, it still blows my mind. It just blows my mind. The whole thing.
Yeah.
It's so obvious that it's a problem. I don't understand how they could.
I
see it.
Don't fundamentalists make fun of the Catholic Church for penance and the idea of paying your way out of things, right?
Drop the mic right there.
I think this is material worth further investigation, which of course you're doing with your work and your book, which we're really excited for. Do you have any potential timeline? Is it still
sort of
it's
under review?
Okay.
And so it's been edited. I cut it down. It was 150,000 words. Now it's 82,000. So yay me. So I've got a lot of extra stuff too. But, so I'm just being patient now. And when I hear something, I'll shout it from the rooftops. When a contract is signed, I will let
quick question related to your book, and one more teaser I want to throw out there. Was there anything you stumbled across as you were doing research for your book that you find really interesting or noteworthy? Or
pick
one little thing to throw out.
The most interesting thing is that Bob Jones Sr., and I don't know, Nate, maybe it's just because I was there longer, but I know Bob Jones Sr.'s birthday as well as I know my own dad's. They repeated it so much.
I only just spent 4 years there.
Okay, October 30th, 1883. October 30th, 1883. His next oldest sibling was born 4.5 months before he was.
Ooh.
What? So all we know is that they didn't, those two people, her name's Exie Ann is his older sister, 4 and a half months older. Exie Ann and he could not have been born from the same woman. That's all we know. Now, he had a sister die right around that time too. So I'm wondering if he's actually she was 18. And, you know, that's pretty obvious that he says that she died right around the time he was born.
Could he have been,
is that his mom? And they just scooped him up. I mean, that seems like the most obvious. They also moved. So they had two under 6 month old children in the family, and they moved away from their in-laws, or it was Georgia Creel's family. They lived right next door to her family, and they moved like an hour away in the middle of January, when the kids, those two babies were infants. That seems suspicious.
Why did they plaster these people's names on residence halls? Yeah. Thinking, just like, oh, nobody's ever going to look into this ever.
No one's ever.
It's just a name on a building. Who was Bibb Graves? Who was Georgia Creel?
Who's Georgia Creel? Who's Estelle Siddons? I can tell you all about Estelle Siddons too. Estelle Siddons was Mary Gaston's mom. Okay. And when Mary Gaston was 5, her dad was Eugene Stolenwerk, and he died by suicide.
Oh, wow.
She was 5 years old. Nobody ever talks about that. And the cause was, I mean, he had some health troubles. So I'm thinking he probably, like he'd gotten kicked in the eye by a horse, that kind of thing. So, he had some issues, but I don't know if that was it. I don't know. Of course, I don't know. Mary Gaston's brother died in a tragic drowning when he was 30. I mean, tragic. Wow. That was this. I mean, so these are the kinds of stories I found all over.
A lot of trauma. So, A lot of trauma.
We are absolutely looking forward to your book release. And
thank you for letting me talk and sharing with me.
Absolutely. Thank you for coming, joining us and sharing all of this. This is
enjoyed it.
Such great information. I think one of my takeaways is it's a few things, right? Like Bob Jones University, I'm sure people will be listening and thinking, why should I care about Bob Jones University? I know we've asked that question multiple times on this podcast. And, you know, for a few reasons. One, fundamentalist influence on the larger American project is pretty, pretty heavy. And it's frightening.
It's very heavy.
We can't really ignore. Yes. Like, and I think it's, we can hold two things at the same time, right? We have to be wary about the very wary and very concerned about the Pentecostal influence on the American politics, but fundamentalism is right there alongside Pentecostalism.
The new apostolic reform.
The new apostolic reformation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Those are the new Pentecostal sort of big movement thing going.
Yeah. Down. Yeah. But fundamentalism, while fundamentalism likes to cloister and fundamentalists generally like to steer clear of American politics, they are pushing their ideologies in there in insidious ways.
They love power.
So that's one of the reasons we should care about all of this. And then the other reason I think is on the flip side, or on the opposite end of the spectrum from the larger, political project is the human toll and the students that end up suffering because of this, the former students, the castaways, even alumni like myself, who thought we made it out unscathed, and then years later are looking back and saying, oh my God, I've got these gaping wounds that I never, never.
Where did that go? Where did that go?
So I think if you care about people and you care about the human toll, you'll recognize that places like Bob Jones University are rife with abuse. I mean, in one of our recent episodes, we spoke with Chris Peterman and talked about the abuse toll that places like Bob Jones take. But then there's also the larger scale that we were just talking about. So I think those are two sides of the same coin, and why this is important to talk about.
I completely agree. And if we can, for me, if I can see that Bob Jones' rhetoric in the 19 teens and 20s almost exactly parallels the stuff that's plaguing us today in our public sphere. The Montgomeryans got rid of Bob Jones. They kicked him out. They stopped him. So maybe we can learn from what they did so that we can stop the fundamentalists that are in our public sphere. So that's my hope.
And I think that's the beautiful part of learning history, and why history is so threatening and is being kept out of schools currently, is because when you learn about history, then you can prevent things from repeating themselves. You can, when you see the rhetoric today looks so much like something from back then, you're like, how is history repeating? And it's because it's not being taught. So your work is a contribution in that regard, so we can learn from history.
I hope so. Yeah. Thank you for giving me a chance to amplify it.
Yeah. So whenever the book comes out, we will be talking about it, and looking forward to that. And
thank you. And I'll send you some of my data.
Oh yeah, absolutely, so absolutely. Looking forward to reading, diving into that. And we'll also, we'll put some stuff into the show notes so people can find you. But just for the sake of those who are listening to us while they're driving or unable to fiddle through their devices, where can people find you online?
The best place is my website is drslewis.org, and my digital archive is WhatBJU, WUTBJU.org. And the name of it, the formal name of it is What in the World BJU. And if you remember those little inserts in the bulletins that they used to have in church that BJU published, What in the World? It's my little riff on that. The oldest and the latest about Bob Jones University.
Nice. Well, thank you again for coming and hanging out.
Right, thank you. This is fun.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Full Mutuality Podcast. We're so glad you decided to join us today.
If you haven't already, please subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Spotify, and pretty much every other podcast app. Just search for Full Mutuality on your app of choice or visit our website, fullmutuality.com, for links to all the apps you can subscribe to us on.
And if you enjoyed what you heard, we'd love it if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or on our website. A quick review is one of the best ways you can support us.
Speaking of support, you can also partner with us on Patreon. For just $5 a month, you'll be helping us produce this podcast, and you'll get access to other content such as exclusive episodes, access to occasional live stream recording sessions, and more. Just head over to patreon.com/fullmutuality to sign up.
Thank you again for hanging out with us today, and we'll see you on the next episode of the Full Mutuality Podcast.
This is a Dauntless Media Collective podcast. Visit dauntless.fm for more content.